Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox. My pronouns are he, him. I will be your keeper.
Hello, I'm Becky Annison. My pronouns are she, her, and I will be playing Gabby the Surge, and her pronouns are also she, her.
And I'm James Torrance. My pronouns are he, him, and I will be playing Azure Wings, the last, whose pronouns are also he, him.
Hi, folks. I'm Nick Bate. My pronouns are he, him. And I'm playing the Viscount Greaves, who is the Shade. His pronouns are also he, him.
Hi, my name's Sue Elliott. My pronouns are she, her. I'll be playing August Nye, the Found, whose pronouns are also she, her.
And today we are here to play Apocalypse Keys by Jamila R. Najadi.
Hello, I'm Josh Fox, editor of the podcast and GM of our Apocalypse Keys game. We're having a great time creating Black Armada Tales, and we hope you're enjoying listening to it. If you like what we're doing, and you'd like other people to hear about it, please consider rating and reviewing the podcast. A 5-star review will make a big difference to whether people are able to find the podcast. We'd also love it if you joined us on Twitter. The podcast account is B Armada Tales. That's letter B, followed by Armada Tales. We'd love to hear what you think of the podcast. So, you're on what seems to be Greaves' submarine, and the Voice of Steel has just come over the tannoy, blaming Greaves for his death and threatening bloody revenge. And he closes up by saying, "Run, Greaves, run!" What do you do?
At this dramatic juncture, I say, "I have a start of session move."
Oh yeah, start of session move.
Okay, as we are sprinting through this submarine, I turn directly to camera and say, "This reminds me of when I was travelling with my fellow Arcanari from the Akanar system to Earth for the first time, for even with all the might of our civilization, travel from star to star remained a cramped and dangerous business. But in the workings of that cramped, noisy Akanari jump ship, it was there that I beheld for the first time through the vid screen Earth, on which I was to be trapped so far from my home star for now millions of years." So, now we do the mechanical bit. I need to remind myself of each time. I am rolling 2d6, I am spending 2 tokens, and I'm saying what I hope for, which is some insight into how to survive a spooky submarine, I think. Boom. I have rolled snake eyes. On a 7-, your memories falter. The keeper will tell you what happens next. Choose either lose the memory or mark ruin to keep the memory. Whilst the memory is not particularly precious, I think I really do want to jump on the ruin train. So let's mark a ruin, but also the keeper tells me what happens next.
Okay. Well, what I'll do, I'm going to inflict a condition on you. You can choose it yourself, but I will just tell you something else that happens first, which might, I suppose, influence your choice. And that is that I'm going to tick the doomsday clock. Dun, dun, dun. This doomsday clock has 8 ticks, by the way. And so as I tick the first one, dozens of projectors descend from the ceiling, displaying video footage from different timelines. There is truth in the contradictions, patterns that cannot be ignored. And another voice comes over the speakers. Before I tell you what the voice says, I'm going to describe what you see on the video feeds, I think. So these video cameras drop down from the ceiling, and you can see clips from your own lives, but not clips of things. Some of them are clips of things that actually happened, and some of them are clips of things that could have happened, but didn't. So, for example, we see Greaves' submarine returning to the surface with an alive Greaves still in it after the dread encounter that stole away his life.
I'm now very curious about what I look like, but...
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I'm going to ask each of you to tell me about a turning point in your life that you've sometimes wondered about, and what we see on the camera. I've already given you one, Greaves, but I'm going to make you do another one just to be cruel. And anyone champing at the bit? Gabby.
I think that we see what Gabby's life would have been like if she and Azure Wings had not decided to break off their relationship.
Does it look delightfully romantic and running through wheat fields together, or?
I don't think it's running through wheat fields together, but I do think it looks good. So the relationship was broken off, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, James, because the nature of our relationship made it harder for me to control my powers and not bring forth the apocalypse. I think you brought out some of the worst in me in that regard, because you're not human. And so all of my, well, I should just erase humans from the world. It's like, well, yeah, because, you know, Azure Wings is clearly much better than those humans, or something like that, something like that. And so I think this is showing an image of, if I just managed to exercise a bit more self-control and stayed with Azure Wings, how it could have been pretty good.
Cool.
Because it's not that she doesn't have feelings for Azure Wings. As we know, she still does. It's just all tragic and tortured.
Lovely. So we see the two of you together and...
me finding some reserves of self-control and that I previously didn't have. Or maybe a reason to have that self-control where previously perhaps I didn't.
So we see that, and we also see footage of you staying with Azure Wings, but not learning to control your powers. We see a world in which you decide that it is worth the sacrifice to stay with Azure Wings, and in which you do unleash your powers more readily and more destructively than you otherwise would have, and many other scenarios besides. Who else would like to give us the light and or dark version of their life story? Greaves, of course.
Yeah, I've got one. And I think it begins with the classic sliding doors and the twist in this alternate version of past / future that we see is that Greaves was never assigned to the mission where he first worked together with Danforth. Perhaps he was injured that day or ignored the message from the commander or something, and so he never met Danforth on that mission. And I think that this is maybe a dark version of the future, because as it plays forward, we see Greaves spending more and more and more time locked up in his laboratory in the basement of the division, conducting his experiments, getting out less and less, probably, I don't know, maybe there's even like dust starts piling up on his diving suit as he sits in front of a problem for long periods of time. I don't know if you get division agents knocking on the door or trying to convince him to come out, and angry outbursts while he demands not to be disturbed from his labours.
Is that because he never meets Danforth? Did I understand that right?
Yeah, he never has a reason to leave his lab now.
Yes. You also see images of what would have happened if Danforth had not died. Do you look at them?
Why do you ask me the hard questions?
It's a laugh, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, I don't think Greaves can help but look at them. But he doesn't focus on them. He's not fixated on them. There's so much happening both in the versions of the future that are his and in the versions of the future that are everybody else's to distract him. And I do have the distracted condition marked at the moment, so I don't think I focus on any one thing while all this is happening.
Perhaps you see a glimpse of a smiling face, sharing a joke, something like that. But it's all overwhelmed by the hubbub of images. Are other people ready to go with something?
I've got one.
Cool.
So, we see Danforth struggling through the winds of the Antarctic in his Antarctic Explorer gear and wiping aside the snow and ice to reveal Azure Wings is, you know, H.R. Geiger-looking Gribbly Akinari technology cryo capsule that's kept him preserved these 65 million years. And Danforth activates the defrost, but this time, finding a little more self-control or maybe more calming gestures on Danforth's part, Azure Wings does not dive into Danforth's brain Instead, you know, we cut to the Antarctic research tent and Danforth is teaching Azure Wings the rudiments of human language, and thus they become friends. They head back to Division HQ together. Danforth, you know, divorces Jolene, marries Greaves. I go to their wedding. We all run through wheat fields together.
And Jolene marries Azure Wings.
Maybe.
It's certainly possible.
And I think we can just end the season on that note. I think it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. That was the real game all along. This is just a nightmare scenario that's been dreamed up by Greaves. Cool. I think we also see the possible world in which Azure Wings and his people got the ritual right. And the terrible destruction of the Earth never happened. And we see beautiful Cretaceous rooftops and Akinari scientists strolling along tree-lined boulevards. And of course, there are millions of years of all that. What do we see of August?
We see Greaves and a accompanying division team breaking into the laboratory or whatever secure building is currently housing August. There's bodies everywhere, as there were at the time. And when Greaves smashes into the room where August is being held, it's empty. There's no one there. And he looks around and leaves. But in fact, August was in the room all the time. She just chose for Greaves not to see her. And she waits for everyone to leave. And then she makes her way out of the building herself. And she's out on her own, completely free for the first time in her life. And you see her basically become entirely self-reliant, maybe in not the most legal ways. She's quite able to steal what she needs without attracting any attention at all. And I think this potentially escalates into bigger and bigger crimes as the anger that she feels from being trapped for so long overtakes, and her crimes become more and more destructive and vindictive.
I think we see a darker version of that story as well, where she goes free and quickly learns how powerful she really is. She doesn't need to steal or commit crimes because she can make anybody do anything that she wants. And she becomes a heedless controller of anyone that she meets, and we finally see Greaves and Gabby and Azure Wings coming to deal with the new apocalypse of puppeted people that she has unleashed. And we see countless other possible pasts and futures also, and as I said, there are patterns, truth in the contradictions. And then a voice comes over the tannoy. It is a voice that you recognise, but it takes you a few moments to place it because it doesn't make any sense for you to be hearing it. And it says, "Intruders, you are trespassing on my ship. I'm giving you this one chance to get out. Steel will not be so generous, but if you remain, I will come and I will find you." It's the voice of Greaves. Does your voice sound any different since you became a skull in a jar, by the way? It comes out of a little speaker, doesn't it? But is it your...
It does. So it sounds... Yeah, I think it does sound a little bit different. I think it sounds like drier. You get older, you know, like this. It's the same person, clearly, but it's got the kind of rougher edges that come with age. A little bit more gravel, a little bit more sandpaper.
So this is the voice of a Greaves that never aged. It's this the voice of a Greaves as he was just before he died. If you pay any attention to the timbre and tone.
Probably just sounds like me to me, because I probably still sound like that to me.
Yeah, perhaps so. The rest of you will recognise it as Greaves, but it does sound different too.
And is there a tide of dead division agents descending on us? Is that... Steel demanded that we run, so
possibly, but about to be. But we didn't. I think I said something like, "What do you do?" And then James said, why I started with session moves. So, what do you do?
I think I know what I think Greaves spins around as sort of as fast as he can to the three of you, and this follows straight on from visions of August's grim future. I think he spins around and he sticks his hand out in August's direction and says, "August, there's no time," and indicates with a hand gesture that he wants her to grab his hand and presumably make some sort of telepathic connection there.
August takes his hand.
And I guess we kind of smash cut into the in-brain version. And what I'm trying to dump into August's brain is the how to get out, the route to the airlock through the submarine. So it's probably viewing a memory of me leaving the submarine or getting into the submarine or something like that, just so that in an instant you know how to get there.
Cool. I think that just happens, right? We don't need a roll for that.
I think I agree. And then I'm gonna drop my hand and say to August, "Go, run, lead them. I'll follow."
August nods and just turns and starts to run towards the airlock.
Right, let's just check in on whether who's doing what here. Sounds like Greaves is not going with August for some reason. What about the rest of you?
Greaves is intending to follow. I'm just much slower than everyone else, and I was being threatened. And so if it comes to it, I'll lead people astray or whatever. But I don't have an alternate plan.
Cool. I for a second, I thought you were going to like go off and try and hack into the, you know, try and find something or I don't know what. Go rogue.
Set the self-destruct sequence on the submarine.
Yeah.
From orbit.
Could happen.
Are the rest of you following August?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've gone for ticking the distant condition as I, you know, retreat into memories and staring at these projections of what might have been. So I think I am, but I'm like sort of, you know, ambling along like a window shopper when I really should be running like Usain Bolt.
But since you can move through things at will.
Well, I can, but Dan, I'm still in Danforth's body and that can't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that would be bad. Okay. Cool.
Has that ever happened, though? Have you forgotten occasionally and just run Danforth into a wall?
Oh, Matt, it must have been like, you know, in the early days. All the time.
Poor Danforth's body just had this bruised nose. on end.
Just nose like a boxer.
Do you wear Danforth's body like a suit, or do you feel pain when you accidentally smash it into a wall?
I think it's more like, you know, like the warning lights coming on in your car. Like, you're aware of it, you don't like it, but it's not quite the same.
Noted.
Right, so I feel like I probably should make something of the fact that Greaves is slow.
If you want, I can turn my... I mean, we're being pursued by ghosts. I'm a necromancer. I think if a tide of them is about to descend on us, then I might turn around to face them.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that steel will appear for sure, and... Do you want to tell me anything about what Steel was like in life?
Okay, so Steel was my first mate in this submarine expedition. I think Steel and I were probably partners in this. So he wasn't just a crew person who got hired on or the person who was part of this job. We probably went on all kinds of expeditions together. And what I'm kind of imagining is that Steel was the hardy, practical one of the pair, while I was off on mad schemes and intellectual pursuits. Steel was dealing with the logistics and keeping me on task. But I think we were friends.
Okay. So the others are moving off ahead and you see them turn off per your psychic instructions. But before you can get to the same turn off, a figure appears lit by the flickering pale light of the submarine's lighting system, a seemingly human form, but as it gets closer, you see it is bloated and swollen from exposure to water, and its staring eyes roll loosely in its skull. Its body moves jerkily, but you can nevertheless recognize the aspect of your first mate, Steel. And if there were any doubts, you see the tattoo that he had on his left arm, faded, distorted by the water, but still there. And there is rage in his eyes and an anger directed at you. He's holding the anchor of the submarine like a weapon, and he's kind of lurching towards you. It's clear that he means to do you harm. What do you do?
I slow to an immediate stop. Like, I stop running, and I'm gonna try this on. I'm gonna say, Steel, you've been dead hundreds of years. This isn't, one way or another, this isn't you. What I'm not sure about is if this is your spirit or if this is the house.
Oh, it's me, Greaves. In every way that matters. You left us behind. You left us to die. Do you think I'm going to pass up my one opportunity to hurt you back?
Everything you say is true, Steel. I did leave you to die. It is my fault. I continue to be punished for it. But all of that is by the by. And what I'm trying to do here is buy myself enough time to kind of reach out with my necromantic powers and see if I can disentangle what's in front of me. Like, if this is just the spirit of a dead person, then I would like to know. And if it's not, then I want to see what I can see. I'm sort of trying to grasp keys.
Okay.
Using my necromantic powers, but I don't know if that's sufficient.
Sure, no, I think... Go on, why not? You can roll for it and see what happens, can't you?
I can. I'm also going to take some darkness tokens for reacting with cold reason and logic, which is actually going to cause me problems. I'm going to be torn between after I do this move. So I'm going to spend 3 darkness tokens and grasp at keys. I roll an 8, so I end up with an 11, which is bad town.
It's an overshoot.
Unless I want to spend a bond, which I may do. Actually, no, I'm going to stick with the 11 because I like the... So, on an 11 plus, you uncover a key, but there's a significant complication, cost, or fallout. The keeper will tell you what it is.
Okay, interesting. What exactly is it you're doing? You're kind of... How are you ascertaining whether he's really a ghost or not?
I think that Greaves can sense and manipulate necromantic energy. And so, I don't know if that's like a feature of dead things. So, you know, in a burnt out forest, maybe there's, I'm kind of picturing a kind of sickly green version of the forest that is overlaid in Greaves' vision when he reaches out with his necromantic powers. And so I'm trying to do the same thing here. I'm trying to sense if what I'm looking at is a spirit, something dead or associated with the dead, and then dig in and try and extract the essence of the thing. Is it steel? Is it something to do with the old house? Was it constructed from necromantic energy, or is it the byproduct of a death, or, you know, getting all forensic on that necromantic?
Got it. Okay, cool. So, yes, you almost instantly sense the necromantic energy about steel. But locking onto his essence is a harder task, and you keep talking to try and stall for time, as you said. And as you do, you begin to lock onto him. You also sense the presence of other ghosts nearby. Some of them on the submarine, you think. Some of them elsewhere. Physically nearby, but in places that could not exist if you really are in a submarine under the water. And you feel the image of the ghosts start to form in your mind, the true image of who they are and what they are. And you get flashes as well of their innermost thoughts and memories. And it is Steel. It really is him. You get the flash of the memory when you first met, of times where you stood over the command, the briefing table, and studied some reading together and debated what it meant, of times when the submarine was in jeopardy and his quick actions saved you all. And you also pick up something you didn't know, that something that sticks out like a jagged edge in his mind, and you're drawn to it. You sense a memory of a conversation with a man you don't recognise in a dark suit who tells Steele, I need somebody on the inside. I need somebody who can report back on what this Greaves is doing, and the results of his experiments will be of great interest to us. I need someone who can gain his trust. Can you do it? And you hear Steele say, yes, I can do it. I think so. That's what you get out of Steele's mind. While that is happening, you are also conscious of similar jagged edges in the essences of other nearby ghosts, your former crewmates being the most psychically visible to you. You can sense secret shames, secrets that they never told anybody, just reaching out, wanting to be laid bare to your necromantic power. But the closest at hand is Steele and his betrayal of you. While this is happening, of course, he's still lurching towards you, carrying a massive anchor. What do you do?
Is that the significant complication, cost or fallout?
I think that's the situation I've described is sufficiently complicated. Yeah, I don't need to work out what exactly the complication is. But the key, for what it's worth, the key is the dark secrets of division members, including Steele.
Okay, so what do I do? I mean, I tear Steele's ghost apart. Yeah, I mean, I'm torn between in this point, by definition. And so I think that's what happens. So when you're torn between your monstrous nature and your human heart, make a choice. And I think the choice I make is to let my monstrous nature show and describe the damage your outburst causes. So I think I just gather that necromantic power about me and annihilate Steele and any other crew members who are nearby. I think almost without a thought, in the sense that these dead things are beneath me.
Cool.
Maybe you want me to unleash my powers, I'm not sure.
I mean, tell me what you think. This doesn't seem like something that would be especially difficult for you. I think you can destroy these ghosts without much effort.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I'm also marking ruin as a result of that torn between, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the significance of it, really. Not the hardness of it, but the, you know, these really are the ghosts of your former friends, and you feel each one of them snuff out as you undo them. Are they gone forever?
Yes, I think so. I think that's the. I'm annihilating them. That's it.
Okay. Well, then I guess the next thing we probably see is Greaves climbing up out of the submarine, up the rusted ladder that leads out to the top. I don't know what you call the bit that sticks out of the top of a submarine. It's probably got a name.
Conning tower, maybe.
The blowhole.
Yeah. yeah. Well, anyway, whatever it is, you come out the top with the other three standing around, waiting. You are no longer in the basement or the submarine. This ladder has led you into a room filled with filing cabinets, lots of them, row upon row. Thank you for listening to Black Armada Tales. We've been playing Apocalypse Keys by Jamila R. Najadi. You can find out more about Apocalypse Keys at evilhat.com/home/apocalypse-keys. And don't forget to rate and review the podcast and join us on Twitter, where we are BArmadaTales. If you're struggling to find a pen to write all that down, you can find that information and more in the show notes. See you next time. Can we hear your fridge? I haven't heard any fridges.
Yeah, I did. I recorded a minute of ambient fridge from where I'm sitting, and I couldn't see anything on the waveform. So hopefully that means, you know.
I should have recorded ambiently eating jelly tots.
Oh yeah, someone's gonna lose their mind in a bad way. Probably also a good way, I guess.
Yeah, they are. Sorry, person.
Welcome to Black Armada Tastes. Jelly tots.
I don't ever want to listen to that podcast.
A jelly tot's a peculiarly British thing. Or will our international audience know what a jelly tot is?
I don't know.
Nick, you're our representative international person.
Yeah, I've been pseudo-international, really. Is Australia that different? Sunnier? Deadlier?
You haven't got proper Marmite, so yes.
Yeah, that
you
is
You haven't
true,
got
my
proper
friend.
Vegemite.
No, we don't.
Yeah, exactly.
You're wrong about Marmite, but anyway. I don't think we have jelly tots. And so I'm not actually entirely clear what texture jelly tots are. Jellies are a different texture here. The Haribo texture is not what those things taste like, are textured like in Australia.
What are they like in Australia?
They're less chewy.
Is it not just because it's colder?
Is it what?
Because it's colder here.
You're saying that they're frozen versions of the
semi-Freddo jelly sweets.
I feel like whenever I put a Haribo in my mouth, the first time I bite down on it, if I then took it out of my mouth, it would still have the same shape.
Yeah.
But they don't. Not so for the Australian equivalent.
So are they more like jelly babies? Because obviously jelly babies are also jelly sweets, but are much softer.
Yeah, more like that, I would say. I mean, you can probably get Haribo in all the Australian grocery stores now. I don't...
So I would say that jelly tots are... I mean, I think they're a bit less firm than, like, the firmer Haribos. Like, you know, like a Tang Fastix cola bottle or something like that would be a bit firmer.
I mean,
yeah, they're a bit more towards fruit pastels, I think, on the
yeah, they're quite similar fruit to fruit pastels, aren't they?
Yeah.
But they're much
But our American friends won't know what a fruit pastel is either, probably. Who knows what they are? They're just to eat Twinkies all day, I think. They don't have
But they have
sweets.
Tots in America, don't they? But they're potato products.
Tater tots.
Yeah.
I don't know what a tater tot is. I hear people talking about it on the telly and I'm like, what?
We call
is
them
that like made of jelly?
Potato gems in Australia? What would you call them here?
Croquettes? Potato croquettes?
We don't have them. I just said that.
No, we have smiley faces.
Oh, we do. That's our smiley faces. And mini waffles.
Yeah, no, the texture on those is totally
dinosaurs.
Different.
Oh.
I'd never met a potato waffle till I moved over here.
Oh. How do you feel about them now you've met them?
pretty good. You can put them in the toaster.
Yeah, they are pretty good.
You just said that a tater tot is not like a potato waffle.
Yes.
So in that case, what's it like?
Larger individual bits of potato.
Yeah.
Like a hash brown.
Yeah, more like a hash brown.
But no onion.
There's onion in your hash browns?
There's onion in all hash browns, isn't there? I thought one of the defining features of a hash brown was that it was potato and onion.
I mean,
Listeners, write in with your comments. Resolve this issue for us.
I was thinking that a hash brown is like a kind of potato rösti. But squished together into, like, reformed then into a potato shape and then cooked. But I don't know whether that's true. I don't actually know how you make a hash brown other than go to the greasy spoon and ask for one.
See, I'm looking...
I have made a hash brown.
Oh, so Wikipedia says some recipes add diced or chopped onions, but Wikipedia seems to take the position that onions are not an integral, you know, defining part of a hash brown.
Potato products, if you ever want to spark a war when you're talking to Australians, ask them if they're called potato cakes or potato scallops.
What the fuck is that?
it's like a scallop. Yeah. it's like a disc of potato, not like a slice of potato, but like a disc of potato that you deep fry.
Hang on, there's a Yorkshire scallop or something, isn't there? Which is that?
Could be.
I've had it in the fish and chip shop round here because we're really close to Yorkshire.
It's just potatoes all the way down, isn't it?
Scallop, but it's like a Yorkshire something.
Maybe that's why they call them potato scallops in New South Wales.
Maybe.
Is the Yorkshire connection.
There's a Yorkshire
connection.
It is
hard to believe that potatoes do not come from European culture at all, that they come from another place. Because this seems so integral to our cooking and
heaven
culture.
Josh, I think they come from heaven.
And tomatoes too? Is that, have I got that right?
They also come from heaven. Big tomatoes over here.
You can graft tomato plants onto potato plants. And
what happens then?
Grow both at the same time.
Do you get like beautiful, sort of slightly acid, slightly sweet potatoes?
I think you get both potatoes and tomatoes in one plant.
That's the
Fuck
perfect.
Me, that sounds amazing.
I'd never need to eat any other foodstuff ever again.
Why hasn't anybody done this?
I think grafting is kind of quite an annoying, not 100% successful planting technique, possibly.
Can I graft a peanut on as well? And then that will cover my primary food.
Or you can make my peanut, tomato, and potato layer.
That has lentils.
Just from one plant. Oh, I know, but.
Pretty sure that's how the triffids were created.
I'm willing to overlook that. Okay, well, anywho. So, you were.
Is this clue going to be? Is this key going to be potato based?
It's going to be potato based. You just step through the door, and on the other side is a tomato plant. But wait, no. What's this at the base?
Am I back in heaven? Is that what's happened?
Potatoes. It's potatoes. And that was what the mystery was all about.